It's Wednesday, June 18th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 104 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Phil.
My name is Chad.
And my name is Chris.
That's right, we have Phil on the episode.
Dun, dun, dun.
Crap.
Phil, I'd like to welcome you back to the show again. Not that you really ever were here to begin with or left, but hey, you've been here on and off.
And in spirit.
I was, you know, it's funny because we talk about all the changes through the boots going under, and yet with the exception of Chris, the four people on the mics here in St. Louis are all people that go back to the start of the show. So, I don't know, maybe some things don't change. But I was wondering, Phil, since you're here, if you would share with us some piece of great Phil wisdom.
Well, I don't know if it's... You know what? People that make packaging should really revamp that. Because you know how, like...
Like the whole package concept?
Well,
you,
like...
You have a problem
like,
with?
You know how, like, you'll grab...
Phil hates
like,
his own package.
The packet of cheese, the shredded cheese, and it says tear here to open, and you tear it and it doesn't.
And then
doesn't.
You just like and tear the just, whole thing and there's cheese everywhere.
Yes, and then like it's supposed to be resealed so you can save it and it you can't anymore.
Phil,
like,
that was pretty bad on the axis of dumb things you've said.
Well, you just said something and it was the first thing that came to my mind.
I didn't say anything.
I have to agree with you.
They don't put cheese in clamshell packaging yet, so that's a good thing.
Right. Yeah, oh, clamshell. I want to find the man who invented clamshell packaging, find the other man or woman or whoever that decided to make it a market standard, and kill them. I hate clamshell packaging.
Would you kill them by making...
It was invented by people with steel hands, because they never cut.
Would you kill them by creating a giant clamshell package and seal them in it
yes.
and watch and hang it on a giant hook?
Yes, and be like, you know what? If you can get out, I'll let you live. If in the next 3 minutes with your bare hands before you suffocate, you can open this f***ing package and I'll be happy to bleep that out, then I will let you live. And they won't be able to do it because it's impossible to open those
20
things.
20 million years later, they will still be well preserved.
The only recommendation anyone gave me was, oh, there's these special tools you can order online that makes them really...
Yeah, tools?
Why do I want to order a $20 tool to open up a damned package that I've bought? I just freaking put the blister back on a cardboard backing so I can tear it open.
I think they should make clamshell caskets.
Cool.
It'd stop grave robbery.
Yeah, and all flesh must be eaten.
Which wouldn't be worth it anymore.
Yeah, the zombocalypse wouldn't happen.
Unless
That's
you get...
true. You'd have a bunch of zombies desperately clawing their way out and getting very frustrated in the process.
The only zombie that would actually be able to eat any corpses is that guy with the dark hair and dark beard who yells on all the infomercials.
Billy Mays.
Yeah, Billy Mays. Yeah, he'd be the only dangerous zombie in the world. I have to agree, though, Phil, even the clamshell thing aside, that packaging a lot of things irritates me, and I've ended up with many exploded bags of chips and such, so...
Get an X-Acto knife. It'll open anything.
You know, I don't have these problems. You guys are just too tense. You're just like... chips roar! And I'm just like, hey,
Hulk,
you know, I kind of feel like some chips. I think I'll calmly open this package and proceed to eat a handful.
I do have fond memories of the original Star Wars figures when they came out. It was just a simple plastic covering with a cardboard backing, and your figure bounced around inside there, and you could just peel it off, and it was wonderful.
Yes, blister packs. What is wrong with blister packs? Why can we not bring those back?
And they were the best because on the back of them, of course, they would have their little ads for the proof of purchase mail-ins. You could get, you know, you send in your five, you can get your Boba Fett who has the missile pack that would fire. And then, of course, when you did that, you got them and you didn't. And then you were frustrated because they had to recall it because people choked.
Hmm. And that's just funny. I don't know why.
Duh, Boba Fett's a killer.
Yeah, exactly.
And they took the stupid people out of the gene pool.
I still want to hold up a 7-Eleven with Megatron.
Right now, we're in the process of taking the tomato lovers out of the gene pool. So
yeah, I hate to say it. I want to hold up a 7-Eleven with a shockwave, but I don't think it'll work.
No, they actually rot.
Unless they're really afraid of purple. In which case, they will be terrified.
Boy, that is a lot of purple.
Bill, while we got you on here, I guess we'll go ahead and plug. You've got a new podcast. Insert Coin Live isn't around anymore. But you have now switched over to as a Red Earth Saga.
It is the Red Earth Saga, and as I mentioned on my lengthy posting for it, that you are actually part of the influence into that is because I've never been able to play any of the Danverse, but I've heard of the stories of the Danverses that you've run.
Uh-huh.
I think that's really cool. And it's like, I know me personally, I've been working on this idea for a while, and I know that other people have similar ideas.
All right, well, hold on here. Let's back out of the felonies here. What exactly is Red Earth Saga?
Okay, well, basically it
is... Charles Babbage had this idea.
Ooh, I like where this is headed.
Well, basically...
I also like Babbage's before it got bought out by GameStop, but that's a whole other story.
Dude. Babbage's and Egghead smelled like computer store.
I loved Egghead.
They don't smell like computer stores anymore. They just smell like GameStop.
Like, they just smell like places that ripped me off of my mammoth.
Those
in,
are the people that came Newegg
online. So,
did it?
Yes.
Well, I can't smell that on my computer.
Newegg is wonderful.
Okay, well, anyways. All right, so Phil, what is Red Earth Saga?
Red Earth Saga is basically this premise where I've taken... I tried to stay...
He's taken all of your ideas and
I
stolen
ripped
them
off.
This sounds like a Chad campaign.
I steal your ideas. I steal them up.
Your hit points.
But anyways, I take basically simple premises and I try to evolve them into a science fiction era where I try to come up with how would we really evolve into a spacefaring people?
Okay.
And then what would we encounter? Like my idea for when they encounter the aliens happens wrong because they can't understand them. I mean, there's like complete communication problems,
so,
things like that.
All right, so it's a sci-fi universe. What are you doing? Are you like putting out the game? Are you putting out fiction?
What I'm doing with the podcast itself is I'm fleshing out ideas of like how the space travel works, what kind of technology they have, and I'm creating an encyclopedia of that. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to create short stories of them and then kind of go from there.
And how is the listener involved in this specifically?
Well, I mean, basically, they'll just... They listen. They listen, yes.
Thus, listen.
No, actually, what I do is I put out so much... I put out, like, an idea of, like, how FTL is going to work.
Okay, so Phil puts out.
And, yes.
Yeah, Phil, you're really kind of getting me going
so much
on this end here.
And the thing is, so many people have read different sources of, different books, different ideas from movies or different media.
Right.
On just different... things on how they think FTL should work. So I put out something and I try to give it a very logical, consistent, feel to it. And I create rules for it. And what I want, and I always ask for feedback, is I want them to see it and say, do you think this works? Let me know.
So wait a minute. Let me get this straight. And this is actually a cool idea. You are creating a world and a game, but you're not like... sitting down, writing it down, figuring it out, getting artists and stuff. You're just doing a podcast. You're
and just seeing how it evolves.
Yeah, you're not doing a podcast of this is me creating this game, but you're doing each episode, and as you do each episode, a game is created.
Yeah,
that's so crazy. Only you could think it up, but it's so crazy. It's very intriguing.
Yeah.
And you actually have made me want to listen to this podcast.
It's actually surprisingly because it's like how you guys have a topic about a different thing. This is like me personally putting myself out there, and I'm afraid of people coming in like, you're stupid, you're thinking of this wrong. But
well,
like,
you got to get over
well,
that.
Well, if you make the wrong FTL jump, you're going to go into the void.
Right,
and
you have to
chaos.
Have a thick skin about this. And the thing is, surprisingly, people that have listened to it said, this is really cool. I'm glad somebody else shares my ideas of these things.
All right, so if you're interested...
It sounds like there's a surprising lack of guns in anything that you've said here, so I'm having a really hard time equating this to Phil. I just... this sounds almost like it's a thinking man's thing. I'm waiting for the extreme violence to come in.
That will come in when I design my ship.
Okay. I have now restored my faith in you, Phil. So.
If you heard what he said there, he did not say when I design the ships. He said when I design
my ship.
The main flagship of the human fleet.
The SS
called,
Phil.
No, it's called the Missouri.
The SS.
Oh,
it's
like
the Missouri.
It's a dirigible train.
No, it's
see, Phil, you are ripping me off.
It's a BB-39 battleship on which
the
Japanese Empire surrendered.
Epoch of Rhysos, one of the flagships of one of the human fleets, is the Missouri.
Oh,
so
I didn't know
I hate
that.
To tell you this, guys, but there really was a Missouri.
Yeah, I stood on it. Yeah, like
I know. There's
So you're ripping off history.
Well, I think that's the intention.
There's a state in Missouri, isn't there?
There are four.
Oh, my God. There's an Indian tribe before a state. Oh, we're ripping so much off.
That was the idea, though. In my setting,
a canoe or like a kayak, but whatever.
There are four ships in the setting that are all the four major flagships of one particular army, and they're all named after the flagships from World War II. And I actually looked up like what the Japanese flagships were, what the U.S.
flagships
were.
So what is it, the Yamamoto, the Missouri, the Tirpitz, and...
No, the Yamamoto was the Admiral.
Yamato.
I have them all written down somewhere. I actually figured
that's
them
the
all.
One that,
anyway.
I think you have someone in there who pilots it named Derek Wildstar.
They beat the Tirpitz, too.
Last episode... We said that in this episode, we would deliver some more information about the changes that are coming to Fear the Boot. And so, as promised, we are going to explain kind of where we're taking the podcast and why.
It's not so much going to be a podcasting more, but a porn cast.
Yeah, I was just thinking it would be more of a naturalist cast, and we're all going to sit around naked and look at each other's body here. And
Phil's my fluffer.
A lot.
All right, so let me start off. I've got kind of in true Dan fashion here. I have a nice numbered list, and I won't read you the numbered list like with the numbers, but I will try to work through in some kind of systematic order.
So you're just gonna have a list,
right? It's just
you'll nuance
for my purpose.
So you just teased us with the numbered list.
Do you want to hear it in numbers?
Yes, I want to hear it in numbers.
Right now we are at number zero.
Excellent.
Which is the prologue, which is changes coming to Fear the Boot. And I believe that we've already covered that point sufficiently in saying that changes are coming to Fear the Boot, and we're going to discuss them in this show.
Why are changes coming, Dan?
Funny you should ask. Point number one, why we're making changes.
Oh my gosh, it's like I knew.
Wow, it's amazing.
All right, first, there are three reasons that we are, so, or you could say A, B, and C reasons, if we're going to do this in outline form, why we are making changes to Fear the Boot. The first is, as is well known, we've had a lot of changes in hosting. And it's funny because when this show started out, the intention was that the hosts would change all the time. Mm-hmm. That every episode would have a slightly different mix of people, so we'd get all kinds of perspectives and all kinds of topics. But that never happened. That the show pretty quickly became a fixed format with me, Chad, John, and Adam. And then at one point it became swap in and out Luke, swap in and out. You know, all the other people have come, Tex, and well, Tex is still around. And
Tex, Mike.
Yeah, Mike came in for a while and then left.
Boost swapping.
But what ended up happening was, without intending to, we became a very fixed show. And so now that the hosts have begun changing, like was always kind of intended from the start, really, we're now left trying to adjust the show to that. And that's created some problems with continuing the current format.
And then there's also, like, a lot of people who... After a bunch of hosts have been around for a long time, and then a whole bunch leave, they're like, oh my God, Pod Fade, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, no, this is how it always was.
Right. And, you know, I'm not trying to pretty this up too much because, it sucks when people leave.
Sure.
There were people, I think all the hosts we've had on this show have been great.
Except for that Phil guy.
But, all the hosts we've had have been great additions, have brought good stuff to the show. So I'm not trying to just sugarcoat horse poo here, but the honest fact is that we became a different kind of show than we were originally supposed to be, and now that that's happened, we kind of have to change up the format to return to where we were originally supposed to be. The second reason is there's changing interests. There's just new places we want to go, new things we want to try out. And the third is, let's be honest, after doing this for 2 years, there's a lot of burnout. I mean, we've talked about role-playing games very heavily. And without becoming a product review show...
Yeah, beyond even burnout, we've talked about pretty much all we can think to talk about.
Yeah.
So we can either revisit old topics endlessly, or we can start doing product reviews. And we're not sure we really want to get into either, so this...
Not sure? Oh, I'm sure I don't want to do product reviews.
So,
I'm
very
sure.
This kind of brought us to
the reading
point where we've got to do some kind of a change. So, okay. Here's the changes that are occurring. First off, Fear the Boot itself, the RPG podcast that you were listening to right now.
Flush down the toilet, never to return.
The content of the regular episodes is going to say the exact same. Gaming advice mixed with banter. The
irreverent podcast about role-playing games.
A little bit more. That's right. Yeah. The only things that are going to change.
All my t-shirts are still good.
Yes. So you don't have to change your
You don't have to come out and buy a second edition Tao t-shirt in order to stay.
Yeah, the new Fear the Boot is going to like have 10 more armor than the old Fear the Boot.
That's right.
It's going to be four E the Boot.
Yeah.
The old shirts will be incompatible with the new shirts. So you're going to have to run out and buy a new Fear the Boot codex.
And of three colors.
The new shirts are now sized in squares as opposed to 5 feet steps.
See, that was the whole plan. We take a note from Game Workshop's book that we're going to change everything around, the logos, the colors, so everyone has to buy new swag from us.
Right, exactly. But anyways, there's going to be no change to the content of the regular episodes. The only thing that's going to change is the regularity with which they are released. That they may go down to once every other week, once every couple weeks, instead of being every week, just so that when we sit down, we know that we have really good topics and a lot of energy to talk about these things. We're not just scraping the bottom of the barrel. And you know what? If there comes a month or a course of months where we get a lot of guest hosts or a lot of good ideas and we've got a show every week, then there'll be a show every week. It's just we no longer guarantee the regular episodes to release every week.
But Dan, what do I do if I'm a big Fear the Boot fan and I don't have a show every week?
Chad, I'm not to point three yet. We're on point two.
I have a question. I don't know if this is another sub-point or category. Will those episodes be longer?
No, they will remain the 60-minute length.
Okay.
They will be down to 15.
Good, because I can't stand you guys more than an hour.
Yeah, I can't stand us more than an hour either.
Bonus and interview shows will be absolutely unaffected. They were always irregular and released to begin with, and they'll remain that way. You will see them as often as you did before. Number three, we are going to add two new shows. So if you want your Fear of the Boot fix, we will still be putting out content on a very regular basis. We just need to kind of change the sort of content we're putting out.
So that we have content to put out.
Yeah, exactly. So we have content we're energetic about, have a lot to say about to put out.
So, I mean, basically what you're saying is no matter what, there will be a show once a week coming from this very basement.
Exactly, of some kind. And in fact, there may be more than one a week. Some of these, there may be two or three episodes a week. But the two new shows we're putting out, one is going to be a fiction show. A group of us are going to write our own fiction, read it, and then we will review and critique it here on mic, and of course then get your feedback from it. And we'll probably post the fiction on the site so you can download it and stuff like that. So now we're going to cover all kinds of stuff. My brother-in-law, Adam, wants to be involved in this, and I've already read one of his short stories, and it's very much like literary fiction type of stuff. But personally, I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff, Skies of Glass, Epoch of Rhysos, and something else that somebody suggested that
I'm going to be doing Bella Sera fanfic.
Slash fic at that.
Nice.
No.
Mutated.
Tastefully erotic fanfic.
Well, I was thinking I'm doing either Drake and Josh or iCarly.
Huh?
What? They're Disney shows.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
The problem is I got that.
you have a little girl. And Chris has kids, too.
Yeah.
Chad's kid's not of the TV watching age, really. And
but we surf through it.
Right. So
you put an animated thing on the screen, and they're just like, duh.
But something else that we've talked about doing that I think would be a great idea to keep this gaming relevant, I also think we're going to take some of our campaign settings or campaign plots, and if we can do so tastefully, fictionalize them, and then post somewhere online, like in the resource section, the material that you would need if you really like that. Say, hey, man, I'd love to run a campaign in that city. Here's the information you need with a couple NPC templates and some city layouts or whatever to do that.
Dan, I just popped a big boner because what
Whoa,
you just said
he sure as hell did.
You are going to write down my exploits in Chad's games.
Made John look.
I looked at John look. Hey, there's going to be a couple thousand people listening to this. I'm one of two that can verify the claim, and I had to.
Well, I guess one of three, but I... Well, no, Chad made the claim,
yep.
So...
Phil knew.
I've got a laptop blocking my view with my outline on it, so... All right, well,
and Chris is blissfully thousands of miles away.
Yeah, so I'm doing my best to think of dead puppies and whatnot to not visualize such things.
The second show type that we're going to start releasing...
I hear they're not much fun, Chris.
Yes. Dr. Demento says so.
Mom said puppies' days were through, so.
The second thing
but
were...
it was really good stew. Sorry.
That's all right. I'll forgive you eventually.
I thought you were supposed to flush them down the toilet.
That's gold.
If I think I'm 10,
no, you stuff
would
them and give them to your children for Christmas.
The second show that we're going to release is, and Chad used a great phrase to describe this, the critical deconstruction of entertainment, where we are going to take, it's going to be kind of like a book of the month club, except it's going to be probably more frequent. It's not always going to be books. Yeah. So it could be novels, movies, graphic novels, comics,
could be role-playing
games.
I was even thinking on the drive up here, it's like you could conceivably even do a cheeseburger. At a restaurant.
You could. I don't think we'd go that ridiculous. But the idea is
I could talk about the prime rib thick burger. That's something wonderful to talk about.
But the idea is to take that form of entertainment, take it apart, see what worked creatively, see what didn't work creatively, just kind of, you know, just kick it around, have a little fun with it.
I mean, partially it's a little bit about the media, but the focus isn't on whatever media that we're choosing that week. The focus is on the creativity, to figure out what worked creatively, what didn't work creatively, how to take those creative things and apply them to the creative things that you're doing in your life.
And we will try to keep a schedule posted well in advance so you guys have time to press on and be like, hey, this week we're doing Shogun. Hope you've got it read. And that,
yeah, you got not, 5 minutes.
So we will...
Go ahead, pause. We'll wait.
Yeah. We'll wait. So 1,250 pages later, come back.
Yeah.
So we will...
A good 1,250 pages.
Yeah, it's a damn good 1,250 pages. You may read it in one sitting. That's several days long, but...
And another thing I want to say is that it's not a review podcast. It's not a podcast where we sit down and we say, okay, we take Shogun as an example. We're not going to... I mean, we're going to express ourselves and express our opinions, but the point of the podcast is not to say, yes, you should go out and buy Shogun. No, you should save your money. That's not what it's about. It's about the creative aspect. It's not a review show. It's, like we said, it's a critical deconstruction of the show.
And how Chinarose Davis is awesome.
Yeah.
All right, point number four, since you guys asked for number lists, is website changes. First of all, I want to let you guys know that we intend to have four distinct feeds. One for the existing Fear the Boot RPG podcast, one for the fiction show, one for the media deconstruction show. And then there will be a fourth feed that will be all three together. So if you find over time that one show interests you, one doesn't, whatever, you can mix and match however you please. If you just like the whole Fear the Boot thing, then you can grab one feed that will have all of them combined, and we will give you
one
guys,
feed to unite them all.
We will give you guys that information as soon as we
podcast
have it.
Kings of the sky.
We will also be moving. We've talked about this for a while. I am now in the process of actually doing it. We are going to move the website to a dedicated host, which should make us a lot less laggy and a lot less crash prone, particularly on high traffic days. And we are also going to do a redesign of the site to accommodate the presence of the three shows, because simply put, they each have their own needs. For example, with that deconstruction show, we're going to have like a calendar of upcoming reviews.
Right.
That obviously has no relevant to the RPG podcast or the fiction podcast. And we can go all the way around like that. So we're going to make the feartheboot.com site more of a portal to these three individual shows.
I thought he said porno.
We could make them a porno as well.
Have you seen the picture of the guy with the portal gun right in front of his crotch and then right in front of his butt? Having Heinleinian auto intercourse.
Wow.
I guess not. Well, find it on the internet. I'm sure Dan can just put it in main graphic on the front page now.
Okay.
Dan, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Are any of these shows going to be explicit at all? Is there going to be cussing on any of them?
I don't know. You know,
there will be cussing. I don't know why this can get bleeped out or not.
Yeah, that's really
the Fear of the Boot RPG podcast. I don't want to rock the boat any more than we have to, so I'll leave it as is.
I think that's a good idea.
The fiction writing one, I need to take that up with some other people because if somebody writes
F-bombs in my writing.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we may have to make that explicit with the deconstruction show, Chad, since that was mostly your baby. I was going to let you make the call.
I love to cuss.
Okay.
I love it.
I guess the other two will probably be explicit or at least semi-explicit. Fear the Boot, the RPG podcast, will remain as it always has been, which is a non-explicit, not necessarily...
Snow White.
Yeah.
Right.
Point number five, form changes. All right. This is the ones...
Oh, here comes the outcry.
Yeah, here it comes.
Feel it.
All right. First of all, like when we switch to the new host, one of the things I want to do is switch to new form software. And I want to do that for two big reasons. One, because PHP BB is the most common form of software out there, it is heavily spam and hack prone. And so I would like to move to something that's a little bit, not obscure and crappy, but a little less common, so that it's
more feature rich too.
Well, hopefully. But the second reason is, as someone who has a background in .NET development, I would feel much more comfortable with a forum that is hosted on .NET on a SQL Server database than on PHP on a MySQL database. So that's part of the reason I want to do it. The other two reasons that we are going to do this is, first of all, to meet the needs of the new shows, we're going to have to radically reorganize the forums anyway. And that may mean a lot of topics disappear, a lot of topics get added. It's just going to be a whole new ball game. And honestly, if we were to do that to the existing forum, we'd have to uproot so much of it anyway that it might as well be a start over. And quite frankly, as I was talking to Chad earlier today, I said that our forums kind of remind me of a set of teeth that have never been to the dentist. Because over the past 2 years, as is completely inevitable with any large community, we've had some on and off drama over a variety of things. Anyone who's been following the show knows about all this stuff. There's a lot of spam accounts on there that maybe their post got deleted, but the account never got deleted.
There's a lot of accounts where somebody has posted one thing 2 years ago
and never came back. And on top of that, we've just learned a lot about how to run a successful online community, quite frankly, by making our own mistakes. And so we really want to have a fresh, clean start on the forums.
So Dan, I have a question.
Go.
Does this mean that that Meditator is going to have to repost all of his pictures that he's posted?
Meditator?
A picture spammer.
Yeah.
Extraordinaire.
He's the one who has a rather large and extensive library of interesting and unique and humorous pictures.
Oh.
And he has a track record for him.
He's
a good guy, but he just posts lots of pictures.
All right. Well, what I'm saying here is the forum reset, this won't happen for a little bit here yet. But when it does happen, if there's anything you want to save off the existing forum, go get it now, because I'm going to take it offline eventually to replace it with a clean start forum.
And just so people know, it's not like we're going to make this one announcement and then at some random time when we won't tell anybody, we're just going to take the old forums offline. That is going to, we will let everyone know.
Right.
We will give plenty of warning. We will give a concrete date.
In fact, that is point number six, time frame for all these changes. These changes are going to come relatively quickly, mostly because we're eager to get them started. So expect them to happen within the next 1 month, 2 months at absolute most. But as Chad said, we will keep you guys updated as we learn things, as we get stuff up and running, as we may even put out some betas and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? You know, we will make announcements on the show. We'll probably be making even more regular announcements on the forums in the announcements area. So we're not going to drop any shocks on anyone. Point seven, non-changes.
How many points we got here?
Eight. We're almost done.
Okay, because we're like a half hour into
news. No, and we do.
Even though it is big news.
It's big news, which is why I felt it deserved a place in the regular episode. But we do have a role-playing game topic to come up after this. So,
Phil, say something funny.
That was hysterical.
That was awesome.
All right.
That was very good. That was very good. Good job, Phil.
The things that are not changing, first of all, someone asked if this will have any effect on the side projects we do, and the answer is no. This will have no effect on Fear the Con. This will have no effect on the Worldwide Wing Night.
This will have no effect on our crack sales.
Right. This will have no effect on our appearance at Gen Con. So it will not affect those. And secondly, feartheboot.com will still remain as the portal site for everything we do. So you don't need to memorize a new web address or anything like that. It's just Fear the Boot, in addition to being the portal URL, is now going to be only one of three podcasts there. But we're not going to switch the URL on you guys or anything. So we will make this transition as easy and as waveless as possible, which isn't going to be all that easy, but hey.
No, nor will it be waveless.
Though. All right.
Like I said, I hear the outcries already.
That was point eight. My epilogue on this whole thing is, first of all, we are open to feedback on this. The fact that the show has to change is, quite frankly, immutable. That if we don't change, if we don't evolve, if we don't adapt, this show is not, it's going to pod fade. And
the boot needs to be resold, people.
Yes.
That's right.
And
relaced, resold, a little bit of polish put on it.
Well, I sat down and did some head math. I can't remember with who. But I figured out that we have put out, by the time the show drops, close to 130 hour-long episodes, if you count interviews, bonuses, regulars altogether. I mean, how many seasons of a TV show? There's like 5 or 6 seasons of a TV show. Maybe
five
more.
Or six seasons, 5 or 6 seasons with roughly 20 to 23 episodes per season. So you're looking at slightly over 100 episodes.
Usually a 200 mark is almost 10 years.
So yeah, we're looking at, okay, so then by Chris's math, we're more looking at more like 6 to 7 seasons of a TV show. So, I mean, we've been around for a while. We've got to change a
little
bit.
Somebody calculated down in the forums that we have roughly, I don't remember the exact number, but it is like if you started push play and did not stop, it's roughly 4 days solid worth of material.
As Chad said, we know some people are not going to like the changes because some people don't like change at all, and some people are happy with the current format. Some people may like the new format better. The only thing that I would request from you guys is if you've enjoyed what we've done thus far,
send Dan tickets to the next Batman movie.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But try not to have a sticker shock reaction. Give us your feedback with positive and negative, but be patient. At least give the new format a try. If you listen to the new shows, Fear the Boot as it is, we'll still be there, just released less regularly, but at least give the new shows a try. Let us get a couple episodes in, see what you think. You know, just stick around and, as I keep saying, give it a try.
And if you really don't like change, go on a vision quest with Rafiki.
Remember who you are.
I got that one too.
Excellent. Good. At least somebody got it.
As for the Batman thing, if anyone can... I wasn't going to bring this up, and now Chad mentioned it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If anyone can get us a whole bunch of sneak preview passes...
Or just one.
Well, ideally more than one, so I don't feel guilty. If anyone can get us a whole bunch of preview, like passes to a sneak preview of Batman to the Dark Knight movie before it returns. Yeah, before it returns.
What's it called?
It's Dark Knight. Before Dark Knight releases... that we will happily come out to your area. We've offered 3 things out of this. Is it 4 things? You will have an opportunity to brush my hair. You will get a plaque commemorating the fact that you are my friend. Someone asked for a custom forum title. That was the 4th thing.
Easy.
What was the 3rd thing in there?
Especially since we're deconstructing the
You can
the
say forum, something so. Bad about Unicron without being shot. That was the 4 things that you get about it.
I can just picture you in the theater by yourself. Guilty never was so good.
All right, so anyway.
I was actually fortunate enough to do that with Revenge of the Sith. I was able to go and go to see a media screening of the movie, and I was...
Chris, that's be like I was in the test run of a new proctology department. I mean, that's...
No!
Your Star Wars anti-fanboyism aside, it still was do not watch. It was good. It was fun to do, and
you know, we'll save this for our deconstruction show. But just say briefly, HBO was showing all 6 episodes of Star Wars, and I watched 1 through 6. 1 through 3 really did just plain suck. So
you had a 12-hour Star Wars marathon.
It was on and off. It was across several days.
I thought you were doing it one. It's like you didn't invite anybody.
No.
You didn't pop like a whole bottle full of Valium.
Like you would have shown. Be like,
no,
hey,
I wouldn't have. I hate Star Wars.
I would have shown at the 6-hour mark.
I would have come to your marathon screening and then like an hour in had somebody call me to get me out of there.
Kinda like
and leave me with, we leave me with, with.
Oh,
I'm
Alexander
not going to name him.
Even say.
All right, hold on. That's I have to explain story. This. Fields brought this up. I won't name names, so I'm going to explain this.
Bastard.
Dude, you know, they're not getting married anymore.
After.
We can just crap on this guy.
Okay, fine.
All right.
We'll call this guy.
Wolfgang.
We'll call this guy.
He called himself Wolfgang.
Alexander, nice. Just for the sake of having a name for him.
All right.
Let's say he's called
After
Alexander.
The special editions of Lord of the Rings came out, there were a couple
the special
people,
extended.
Yeah, the extended version.
Return of the King extended came out, and suddenly we all had 14 hours of Lord of the Rings.
Right, exactly. And several people I know had movie marathons where they would start around noonish and watch all 3 movies, have a break for dinner in there somewhere. We had one at my place, and I got invited to one over at Phil's place. So I happily showed up, and Chad was there, John was there, a bunch of people were there, was having a great time, except for the fact there was this one guy there who is a complete dick.
He's insane.
We have a friend named Katie. She's a very sweet girl.
We love her.
She fell head over heels in love with a douchebag.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this guy.
And that's always a problem.
Literally. Now, I mind you, I'm sitting there. I'm the type of person amongst people I don't really know. And this was when I had first met this group of people, sans Chad, who I've known literally for the past 27 or 28 years. But sans Chad, I had just met this group of people. I'm very shy around new people. I said nothing, was very polite, very quiet, just sitting there watching the movie.
Believe it or not, Dan is a shy person.
Yeah, I'm very
shy. All jokes aside, you come out on the podcast, but...
Yeah, in person, I am not a boisterous person at all. Sat there very...
I can vouch for that.
And yet through this whole first hour or two I'm there, this Alexander guy, for no reason that I can discern, was trying to pick a fist fight with me.
Yes.
And then when I wouldn't...
And this just isn't like, oh, Dan, you're being paranoid, or oh, you're reading it wrong. No, he was like, yes. I want to fight you, yeah. You dirty hippie.
And then when I wouldn't take, he then starts trying to pick the same fist fight with Carla.
Yeah.
And so at this point, I finally sent a text message over to Mike, and I'm like, you have to get me out of here. This is insane. And so he called me shortly after, and I was like, oh, really? The servers just went crash? Crap. I guess
I
can come in.
You're not even a server guy. You jerk.
You left me. You know, I am, other than my, I'm well known as a very violent person. I'm a very nice guy. And
no, you talk much trash, Phil. You're probably
a power gamer. In real life, I don't think I've ever seen you angry.
If I got up, walked across this table, and punched you in the face, I don't think you'd do a damn thing.
No, I wouldn't.
Phil has an extensive bunny collection.
He is the only... I actually own a lot of Beanie Babies.
He does own a lot of Beanie Babies.
For all of his violence and role-playing games, Phil is probably seriously one of the most passive people I've ever met.
The thing is, he is the only person that I will not allow in my house.
Yeah.
I have banned him from my house.
He's not really an issue anymore because, again, they're not going out and they're dumped. And
they were
going
to get married and we were not happy.
Yeah.
But now that's off and we're happy again.
My house as well. Dawn banned him from our house. And Dawn is a shy, passive person. And she looked at me and said, never again. He will never enter my house ever again. He put dents. There was a party where he was punching my refrigerator. I don't understand.
Was this? I'm Wolfgang.
When was this?
This was like one of the first big parties he came to. And it was at my old apartment.
Yeah, your old
small
apartment.
One.
Yeah.
And he was punching the refrigerator. He put dents in my refrigerator.
I must have been there, but I don't remember that.
No one has any clue why. And he was being a total ass. And Katie was trying to get him out of the apartment, Finally, they were able to get him out of the apartment. As soon as the door closed, an apartment full of like 50, 60 people broke into applause.
That's a bit of an exaggeration, dude.
I don't know if that apartment could have fit
15 people exploding.
The point is, though, there was applause.
Oh, no, there was applause.
All right, so let's get on then. Now that we've wasted enough time on personal drama and the future of the show, let's get on to what the show actually does, which is role-playing game advice. Got a question from a gentleman on our forums who goes by the name of Ian. I'm guessing he goes by the name of Ian on his birth certificate as well, but that's just an assumption on my part.
His name might be Fred, and he's like, Ian sounds really cool compared to Fred.
Yeah, Ian's a bastardization of John. It's a great name.
He could be Buford G. Elvington III. But
I have a son named Ian.
Do you really?
I do.
Oh, awesome.
He's my oldest.
Cool. Does he like his name? Does he hang his head in shame?
He doesn't seem to complain too much about it.
Yeah, I got fortunate too. All my siblings, we all had pretty good names.
Very easy to yell at him. He only has one syllable, so that's good.
That's two syllables.
It becomes one syllable when you're really angry.
Yeah,
because it just becomes Ian.
Yeah.
All right,
get your ass over here.
Okay. So anyway,
I like having a single syllable name, monosyllabic name.
Here's our question from Ian, and I thought after the first sentence he was going one way with this, but actually he asked a completely different question than what I thought he was asking. He says, is there any chance that in some of the upcoming episodes you might be able to go into further depth on how you guys blend Battletech and MechWarrior? Now, pausing there, that's an interesting idea because for those of you that play Battletech, there's a huge disconnect between the Battletech board game and the MechWarrior role-playing game. And having played probably more hours of that than we have any other single game, we have a lot of house rules, a lot of ideas on how to blur that gap. But obviously that would only interest people who play Battletech. But here's actually what he's asking about. He then goes on to say, I'm not thinking gaming stories, but which resources to use to best incorporate the diplomacy and feudalism that we hear about. Now, for those of you that aren't hugely familiar with Battletech, in the background of Battletech is a whole feudal society. The way they spin it is that as people went out to the stars, democracy broke down. I don't remember the backstory or the exact reasons why. And what happened is you got these local rulers.
Well, the Star League.
Well,
fragmented into its constituent houses.
Because the Star League was feudal.
It just has to do more with distance than anything else. I mean, it's just too far away to make democratic decisions.
Right. It was feudal before the Star League or during the Star League. but what ends up happening is that, you know, one person gets his authority from a higher person and gets this authority from a higher person, each pledging their lands and allegiances all the way up, but retains.
And each capable of actually responding to things that happen in his own territory.
Right.
Just like the real feudal system did.
So, well, the question that he's asking is, how is it that we incorporate that into the game, particularly since in Battletech, it's actually possible that someone within the party, there are edges, at least in second edition MechWarrior, where you could take a noble title and a land grant, and there was a little, honestly, poorly developed, but it was still in their mini game for trying to figure out the cash that you were getting from that land grant. And of course, everyone started asking the questions like, well, wait a minute, what if I want to develop this or put something on it? Or what if I, you know, what are my relations with the other lords around me? And I don't know if specifically this is the exact angle Ian's asking about, but this is at least what came to my mind when he asked the question. And I think the broader issue here for people that don't even play Battletech is there are a ton of games where you have these little side games that could potentially go on. D&D is an obvious example. Everyone's played the D&D game where somebody eventually gets a castle or gets a tribe or gets a little feudal state. You could look at Shadowrun, decking into the Matrix, where somebody goes in and suddenly they're in their own little mini game with all kinds of stuff to develop. And this has nothing to do with the primary game that's going on. And so you have to find some way to integrate the two. And so I wanted to pitch out to there, what's the ways you guys have used to deal with this?
I don't.
And you don't. And
what do you mean you don't?
I don't. Well, we were talking earlier about, like,
you do by not.
Chad, I played in the castle game. You ran it.
Well,
we had a kingdom.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Well,
no, I had the kingdom.
It was something that
you said you had the kingdom. You had the piece of paper.
I was the king, and I was the head of the Splinter
Cell. Yeah, and I told you what to do.
So, anyway. What I'm referring to is something Dan and I, when we were discussing this topic, was that, you know, he was, it was with the Battletech question. How do you deal with the feudal system of Battletech? And my simple answer is, I absolutely do not deal with it. I don't deal with the house nobles and the higher ups. I like to have a smaller scale game. I like to zoom in the focus a bit. And, you know, I don't, you know, you're on a planet and it's not a main system world and it's like on the fringes. And what happens on that planet kind of stays on that planet. Because when you send out for reinforcements to help you with whatever, it takes a long time for the message to get out, a long time for a response to get back, a long time to raise troops, a long time.
Yeah, Battletech's really not about these constantly trafficked lanes of interstellar trade.
Yeah.
Jumping is expensive and it's done with mechs. That's the excuse for mechs.
Yeah.
They're transportable.
Yeah.
That's why we don't just have more tanks and more planes.
Yeah, and the fact that it, you know, the way I play it, and, you know, I see absolutely nothing wrong with playing the high concept, high noble type of game that with a political court intrigue, but just the types of games I run, it's just more about the common man, I guess, or the common soldier. And, you know, when you go to a planet, you get your mechs and you have your general broad orders and you land on the planet and how you carry it out is how you carry it out. That's how I do Battletech.
Well, and how would you deal with it, whether it's Battletech, D&D, any game,
now,
where let's say I own a company, and by company, I don't mean a company of mechs, I mean like a corporation, or I own some land somewhere where it's not other people, it's me personally.
See, what I do on that is that I bring everybody into it. When you have a position of power that is beyond hell, even street gangs have underlings. You have to choose a leader, one leader. And so, like, in the medieval game that we're always talking about, the Seasons campaign, Phil was the leader. He was the king. And then in a courtly medieval system, there are people under Phil. Dawn was the seneschal, who is, like, sort of the wife of the king, only they're not married and they don't do anything. She just runs his household. And then there's like the sort of master at arms, and then there's the master of spies, and then there's the head of the clergy, which John was filling out. And, you know, there are people that delegate down from the king. And all of the group was everyone who delegated directly down from the king. And everybody had a hand in it. And the game, there were zombies and magic and a siege. That's not what the game was about. The game was about the political inner struggles of court life.
Right.
The zombie attack was backdrop. It was setting. And it turned out really well. It worked.
What about in games, though, where you can't involve everyone? Let's say we're playing a BattleTech game, to keep using Ian's example, mm-hmm. where I'm a baron and I have a land grant where I own some large parcel of land on a planet, but nobody else is.
But you're going out and, you know, nobody else wants to.
Exactly.
Well, what I did
But maybe we're playing a mercenary campaign.
Well, Phil, tell them what I did with you. With that. You had a land grant with the AC-20.
Oh, yeah. In our wheel campaign.
Was this the game where he had that debt and that one assault mech showed up to collect in the middle of... No, I don't think it was...
That was a different one.
All right.
I had a title and I had an AC-20 factory that produced AC-20 ammo. But the problem is, where I was stationed was almost on the opposite side of the planet. So when we got taken over... we had a mech that used AC-20, and we would put him into the fight because he would just rip everybody.
Yeah, he's
to
the hardest hitting guy,
right?
Yeah.
The hunchback.
He was the victor. The thing is, though, he only has 8 rounds, you know, and so he's
their base was taken from him, so they had no supplies. He had the ammo that was in him,
and the other mechs we're fighting don't have AC-20, so we can't steal their ammo to, you know. So he's good for one game, and then he's kaput. You know, he's got maybe a medium laser, you know, so let's go haul over to my AC-20 factory and grab some ammo and haul it around so that you can become useful.
What I did was I didn't make it part of the plot. I didn't make it that important, but for a couple of games, I did make it important. And it was about Phil and Phil's character. And, you know, Phil wrote this story out. You know, he wrote a story about his family and about this factory and where it came from and stuff. And I didn't incorporate that into the campaign. But I did, the overall campaign. But I did incorporate it into several games. And I made it important.
It was there. And then when we needed it, we actually used it.
Yeah. And they had a thing where they had to go to this town and they had to steal the ammo because... The factory had been taken over by the enemy.
It strikes me that, broadly speaking, you've got 3 ways of dealing with subgames like that.
Mm-hmm.
One is playing them out in full.
Yeah.
If you're playing Shadowrun and somebody goes into the Matrix, you have them fully decked.
Yeah.
You go through all the rules. Well, I mean, how do you handle that? Because if one guy's the decker, what do you do?
I don't. Like I'm running a cyberpunk campaign right now, and actually we just made character for, we haven't actually run it, and we had a couple of guys who, they knew nothing about cyberpunk. They were fantasy fans and they read fantasy books and role played a lot, but sci-fi was a new concepts to them. And so then I'm explaining to them the kind of choices they can make, and we're doing Savage World, so there's no character classes. I'm explaining the choices that they can make and how they can go about it. And so I'm explaining concepts, and then I got to the concept of a decker, and I'm explaining it, and then I stop in the middle of it. I'm like, listen, my game, you can be whatever you want. If you find this concept fun, go for it. I'm telling you right now, you do not want to be a decker. Because that means you are a computer nerd sitting in your parents' basement. You know, not necessarily. Right. I mean, you're basically sitting in a room by
yourself.
You're
in a warehouse because the economy collapsed and you can't afford an apartment.
Yeah. And you're decking through the Matrix and stuff, and you're following the team as they're doing all the cool stuff on security cameras, opening up doors for them. Obviously, you can do more than that.
It's not necessarily even that parallel. There's a lot of Shadowrun games I've played in where it's like, they get to the corporate gate, somebody has to hack the gate, stop the game, start the decking.
Oh, no.
And so if you choose to do that, I think that's game destroying because you end up losing people. And so the only...
Turning the camera on one person for more than 5 direly needed minutes is disaster.
The only way I found that ever works is if you can find some way to do it offline, out of the game. Where between games, if someone has an empire and you've got detailed empire management rules you want to use, and I know there's a bunch of supplements for D&D, a bunch of generic supplements for empire management. If you write up your own house rules, you handle it between the games when nobody else is there.
Here's the thing. That sort of thing can work. The decking, the empire management thing can work in game if it incorporates everybody.
Right.
And the example I'm going to give, FASA Star Trek. You have the Enterprise. You have your ship, your spaceship. And when you do the when you go to map combat and stuff, it isn't like the captain gets to make all the choices and do everything, and the rest of the crew just sits there and stares and waits for the map combat to be over so they can go on their way mission. Everybody has a piece of the pie. Everybody, there's a helmsman, and they have their own sheet, and they do their own thing. There's the engine room, and they have their own sheet. They do their own thing, and they make choices and such.
Right.
And it, a game has to have that. And like a decking thing would be cool if everybody was in on it.
Yeah,
somehow.
And
if somebody, I mean, there's two kinds of spotlights in a game when a game master runs a game. There's the individual spotlights that are very, very short, where it's like John's character is really cool and he hasn't done anything, and so I give John the spotlight. It's him doing something, but it's not very long, and he has a few minutes to do something cool, and then the spotlight flips back to the second spotlight, which is it's divided up amongst everybody or groups of people within the group. And so everybody is kind of doing something. But when you take that spotlight and say John's the decker and he hasn't done anything in a while and you shine it on him, and then for the next hour and a half,
I'm right, making decker rolls.
It's John doing his John thing in the John Matrix. John's going to be excited.
The John Tricks.
That
the game
would be
master
a nasty,
might be excited.
Terrible place.
Five other people are going to be bored to tears.
Well, so the only way I've ever seen this been made to work, where it involves only one person, is if you put people in non-player roles. For example, you let them play the NPCs. If you're decking, you let them play the ice, and the ice, for those not played Shadowrun, is the computer programs that are attacking the decker, or you let them play another decker who's in the
that
matrix
can be fun.
Trying to so you start.
Oh, I fully
you
support NPCs.
You pass out NPC roles to the other players, so they have something to do.
In that case,
what I've done in the past with Shadowrun is, or at least in that example, is the decking is in the background as an NPC, and also becomes in a certain way a GM plot device where the decker kind of runs along as a hired gun NPC, and whatever the GM wants the players to succeed at in a deck standpoint, they can. But when he needs the decker to fail, so the PCs have to do something else, then, and it's a little bit of railroading, but then you have the decker.
That's what GM screens
role.
Are for.
Well, see, and that's the
exactly.
That's the opposite extreme from playing it out fully, which is not dealing with it at all. That you have an NPC.
Yeah. Or feigning to deal with it.
Yeah.
And just throwing the
you
switch.
Just declare by fiat what's happening. Going back to the Battletech thing. Okay, you own some land. Well, another lord's mad at you, and you can kind of mess with him a little bit, and here's your income, and you just really don't deal with it. You just
and
say by fiat,
that,
here's what's going on.
I don't think
on,
that's
or,
necessarily a bad thing, because I think a lot of GMs do a lot of things by fiat that isn't unfair. I don't think that...
No, that's why a GM's there.
Exactly.
If you could just roll the dice and play the game, you wouldn't need one.
Yeah,
there's someone who has to maintain and make sure that the plot and the story move along at a pace that they feel is entertaining for everybody. And yeah, when you sit down and the decker begins his hour and a half journey while everyone else, you know, starts sitting there patiently for 5 minutes and then starts poking through your game collection, it's not, you know, it's not cool.
Yeah. Right. The middle option, and this is the one that I personally have always preferred.
You pass out heroin to all the people who aren't...
By the time they're done tripping, then they're
do you trip on heroin?
Hookers and blow.
I guess that's what it is.
I guess really not. It's not hallucinogenic, so I don't know.
I don't know the proper.
What's if you do heroin, email dan at feartheboot.com
and
tell
totally
him what
happens. We are totally not cops. Totally.
But the middle solution, this is the one that I prefer, because I think when somebody takes the time to make a character where that's a central thing to their character, owning land, being a nobleman, being a decker, whatever, that's something that's important to them as a player. And so I don't want to write it completely out of the game, but at the same time, I don't want to stall the game to deal with it. And so I try to write up abbreviated rules, these quick little mini games. Like with decking, I don't have them anymore, but back when we were playing Shadowrun really heavily, I had these quick play rules where we could take someone's deck and the programs they had, and I could kind of give the system a rating. And we'd shoot some dice back and forth and use the various die pools, but it wouldn't take more than a couple minutes to play out. Same thing if you're running a kingdom, that, you know, there's going to be some skill checks. We might have some little charts. There might be some events that come up that have repercussions. And then, of course, the whole party's, you know, yelling out their idea of, oh, no, you know, you own farmland, but the farmland just got hit by a big bunch of big plague of grasshoppers, and so now you've got to figure out how to stop the
right.
the peasants from revolting, and so that would give the party
Locust
something to do.
Locust torch very well with a flamer.
But, the, you know, you always, I just try to always take those rules and keep them in there, keep it as part of the game, but boil it down to an abbreviated game, because I felt, it, personally, that neither other extreme works. To do it completely, once again, unless it's between games, one-on-one, or involves everyone in the party, is boring as hell. To cut it out completely, if someone wrote that into their character, it was obviously important to the player, so that also kind of strikes me as unfair. So I try to find that medium where it's like, okay, we can make this an integral part of the game. You can do it. It will have major consequences in the game, but we're going to do it in a couple minutes. We're not going to do this in 2 hours of play.
And another thing that you can do, let's use the decking example, and this can be applied to anything, is that say you have a player or an NPC, you're doing an NPC decking, hacking sort of thing. The guy is just going to make a roll. You know, you're going to do the short abbreviated thing. It's like, okay, Joe, just make your roll and that'll be that. Well, instead of doing that, you can say the players, while they're doing their shadow run and they're in the installation doing whatever, they are helping the decker. They're like at a PC that isn't plugged into the network, pulling up data and passwords, and they're radioing him. It's like, oh, well, that roll that he's about to make, he gets a bonus to it. And then somebody like swipes a key card and puts it in a key card reader and sends that data back to the hacker. Oh, he gets another bonus.
Yeah,
when
they're starting to move toward that with 4th edition. Instead of having, you know, the diplomacy check, the guy with plus 30 diplomacy rolls, he gets a 46, he wins. They have these series of checks where perception guy sees something, gives a bonus to the whole encounter. Then diplomacy guy rolls again and they talk for a while. And then sense motive guy, or intuition, whatever the hell they call it now, gets his roll to add or subtract to the total number. So yeah, bring everyone in on the skill check definitely. Is a very good way to do it.
If you remember, you ran kind of like this homebrew, like home system thing, which was just 2d10. It was a cyberpunk thing.
Yeah.
And my character was like that hacker, except for he was blind.
I remember that. Yeah, that was the game I was the AI.
And the thing is, I would hack into, you know, and get into these cars that had camera and stuff like that. But if I wasn't in my car,
get into me,
I was led around by the other people because I was blind.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, and the thing was, I wouldn't go, all right, I'm decking, blah, 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 blah. We're doing this. I would say, Chad, here's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to hack into this car real quick. You know, I'm inside it currently, blah. And then I'd roll, and then you would say, okay, this is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty quick, but it was usually with the other characters.
Yeah. And you were so technologically omnipresent that it didn't matter that you were stuck in the car, and it didn't matter that I was a server farm.
Right.
We both followed the characters because there's a camera and a TV screen everywhere.
Two quick suggestions, Ian, specifically about your question on Battletech and integrating the nobility and such there. Two resources you might want to look at is one, once again, I wasn't that familiar with MechWarrior 3rd Edition, and Catalyst has not released their edition of MechWarrior, which I guess would be MechWarrior 4th Edition, though I don't know if they're going to call it that. But in 2nd Edition, near the back of the book, there are some rules for doing quick rolls to see what's going on with your land and such. The Mercenaries Handbook is also another great resource if you want to... Chris, did you just fart or something?
That's what I thought I heard.
I may
have. Keep this in the episode.
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Chris, your fart was so mighty we heard it
thousands
of miles
away. Chris, was that a super
loud
fart, or did you put the mic up to your ass?
No. I didn't. I was trying to keep it on the down low.
Oh my god.
Holy crap.
That's
wow.
All right. We all have had the epic fail. Thought we were going to get away with that fart and totally did not moment.
Well, I am sitting on a wood chair, so that did help.
The second thing is the Mercenary's Handbook has really good rules for designing units and rolling up random events regarding them. And if beyond that, you're still trying to find more specific ways to involve nobility and diplomacy and such, a lot of that's just going to come down to your own writing of the setting. You know, the NPCs you write, the situations you create, maybe even some house rules or tables you throw together, or other games you find that you can adapt. If you find there's a ton of games out there that are designed to supplement specifically for running land and handling diplomatic interactions and such.
Or what you can do is you can get on Wikipedia and type in British Empire and then start clicking on different historical dates involving, like, you know, the nobility, or do it for, you know, the Roman papacy in the Middle Ages.
Right.
And there's lots of story hooks and idea all through all, like, the kingdoms and such through Middle Ages and such, where they had these feudal systems of all these court intrigues, tons of NPC ideas. You just rip off from history. Apparently, Phil and Dan do it all the time, so it's okay.
I don't think we're the ones ripping off in this episode.
One thing that I wanted to...
I haven't said much else. That's why I have to say something.
Yeah, I think the sound wave ratio between your sphincter and your mouth is about even at this point.
Now I think you guys are the ones who are thankful you're 1,000 miles away.
Yeah. Indeed.
One thing I wanted to say on if you wanted to do the feudal system, try to keep it small and maybe like on the planet or the very close system. You know, don't go like very high into the ranks.
Yeah, Chad said that. Keep it on such a level that your character actually matters and is visible.
Well, but I think there's also a distance thing there. The further removed you are from that which you're responsible for, the harder it gets to cleanly integrate it with the game.
Or to care.
That it becomes cold.
If you land on a planet that you are like, once again going back to Battletech, 25 jumps away from, it is so irrelevant to the game that basically the person just took an edge for no reason.
Yeah.
And so I think...
Probably took it for the money boat bump.
Maybe, but if you're not playing a game, let's say you're playing a game where your house regulars and the money doesn't really matter,
honestly, keep them back
close to home where it's easier to manage.
As a game master, too, you look at, like, we'll use Battletech as an example. Say they took the noble and the noble title and the land grant edge, and... Look at their character, if they even made a character write-up. Look at their character write-up. If they put a lot of time and effort into their house and nobility and their land and stuff, and it was important to the character, you should probably do something with that. It doesn't have to be the main crux of your game, but probably the person who's playing that character
cares. Work for you, and then he'll like it.
Yeah.
Principle of DMing.
Yeah, and if a person hands you a character sheet with nothing on it except just the stats and, oh, look, he has...
And he spent all the money on another AC-20.
Yeah.
That's what he did it for.
Guess what? Yeah, he doesn't care. You shouldn't either.
All right.
Well, I guess since this show's gotten about as highbrow as it's going to get, we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. So thank
Chris,
you.
Chris, any parting words?
I think he's parted enough.
Yeah. Any parting words? So,
oh no, my cousin Rip is calling online too.
So, anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. As I said, we will keep you guys up to date on exactly how we're going to make these transitions in the two new shows that are coming out. We look forward to doing them, and I hope you will stick around to see how they go. And we will catch you all next time.
See ya.
Later, peace.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.